We're not going to read all that today, but we will sort of tell the story. We'll read a little bit of it in just a moment in Genesis 37. You know, Hollywood and movies is really the land of make-believe, and it's no secret that a lot of movies get made, and they often change the end of the movie, how the movie ends, before the movie gets released. Sometimes they'll do if the movie scores badly with test audiences or with studio execs, they'll change the closing moments of the movie and re-edit it and maybe even reshoot a little bit to make it go the way they want it to go. And you know, there we can look at all kinds of movies where they've done that. You know, remember Back to the Future? You know, they changed the ending of the Back to the Future because there was never supposed to be a sequel. And so when they had a really good reaction from the audiences, test audiences, they changed the ending. They re-edited it, you know. And the original ending of Alien was changed because there weren't going to be any sequels. And the people liked it so much that they had to find a way for the alien not to die, you know. And there ended up being 4 Alien movies. Anyway. Rocky was supposed to die at the end of Rocky V. You know, they'll be making Rocky 97, you know. People didn't want to see Rocky die, you know, so they changed it. You know, and wouldn't it be nice to be able to edit the end of our lives? to go back to our lives and say, you know, okay, that didn't sit well with the test audience of me, so I want to edit that part, you know, and change it. You know, I think a lot of times we start off thinking the story of our life is going to go a certain way. And then it never quite goes that way, does it? And it, I mean, no matter what we do, it never quite goes as planned. You know, I can remember being in high school, and we were starting our senior year, and they were looking for things to put in, you know, the yearbook for the seniors. And they weren't using all of them, but they were, you know, just, there were people interviewing all the seniors and what you want to do. You know, I was at Taft High School. There were 1,200 in my senior class. So nobody got a lot of press. But I can remember them going around to all the senior classes and different times of talking to each person. And where do you think you will be? You know, what is your plan? What are you going to do? You know, you're just starting your senior year. Where do you think your future is going to be? And I can remember sitting there talking to this guy and this girl from that were putting the yearbook together, with absolute confidence. Absolute confidence. I'm going to be going to university on the ROTC program, and in 5 years I'm going to be a Marine Corps officer. Absolute confidence. Boy, that didn't happen. You know, I remember they looked at me funny. Well, in the height of the Vietnam War, that's probably not the best career path to take. But I never that didn't bother me. That was me. That was our family. You know, I've shared how our family has fought in the French and Indian War and the Revolutionary War and the War of 1812 and the Civil War. And you know, I've had, except for me, what happened to me, I would have been in Vietnam. And you take me out of the picture. We've had in our family, in direct lineage, in every major conflict this country has ever been in, and that warrior spirit is built into us. God had other plans. you know, I'm talking about different plans. He changed it. He edited it. You know, and 5 years later, I was finishing my fifth year as a fifth year senior in a Bible college, making about $80 a week. You know, I wasn't definitely not a Marine Corps officer, definitely not anything else, you know, but just doing what God wanted. We all start off with certain dreams, but life has a way of shocking us back to reality, and that's what happened in the next increment of the story, in the story of the Bible. The next major character is Joseph. What you need to understand is, with the exception of Jesus, Joseph gets more press, more chapters written about him than any other biblical character, with the exception of Jesus. And some look at Jesus' life and look at the four Gospels and overlay the four Gospels as all telling the same story, and say that actually Joseph gets more press than Jesus. But I'm not quite sure that washes the way it should. Now, we talked about Abraham, and because Joseph was the son of Jacob, who was the grandson of Isaac and the great grandson of Abraham. So we're just a couple of generations from Abraham. Okay, so we have Abraham and then Isaac and then Jacob, and last week we were finishing up those stories of those guys, and we're introduced to him in Genesis 37 when he's a teenager, growing up in an incredibly dysfunctional home. How many of you had a dysfunctional home? I mean, Joseph had an incredibly dysfunctional home. And this is important for us to see how this all works out. And we want to set the stage. Jacob had married two sisters. The older one, Leah, he was tricked into marrying. And then he married Rachel, the younger one, and gave him, he had 14 years of basically indentured slavery to earn them. But as they went through their years, both Leah and Rachel suffered from infertility, and they couldn't have any children. So, we see this again. It's happened. This is the second or third time it's happened. So they both gave their maidservants to Jacob in order to have children through them. As they were getting older, they realized time was running out, and they wanted there to be children and heirs. So they gave their maidservants to their husband, to Jacob, to have children, and they were Bilhah and Zilpah. You love Old Testament names, Can you imagine standing at your back door and screaming that five times in a row? And it became sort of a contest between these two to see who could outdo the other in having children. So they just started having lots and lots of kids. Jacob had 12 sons. He ended up having 12 sons by these four women, because eventually Leah had a child or two, and eventually Rachel did. And he ends up with 12 sons. Now, for us this sounds a little foreign, doesn't it? I mean, how many people do you know have four women and a whole bunch of kids, and they're all being raised as one family? I mean, it's just a different culture, and we've got to understand that. And so as we look at this, there's a lower story going on. The lower story is Joseph and what's happening and how this comes about. And he comes into this family after all these older kids, the older sons have been born to the maidservants. Leah starts has a couple of kids. And then finally, Rachel, the one that Jacob actually loves, has two sons. And those two sons are Joseph and Benjamin. But she has them as Benjamin first, or Joseph and Benjamin, after all the other ones, most of them, are grown. So she has them very late in her life, when Jacob is now pretty elderly. And so these grown guys are out working, they're all working for the family. They're all working the fields and doing all the shepherding and all the stuff. And they're grown. They have families of their own. And Jacob has these two boys. And particularly, he has Joseph. And Joseph becomes the one that is there for Jacob. And Jacob, Jacob becomes, just like Rachel was the one that Jacob actually loved out of all of those women, Benjamin and Joseph, but Joseph even more, becomes the son that Jacob actually loves. That Jacob, this is his boy. All the rest of them are grown. They're out of they have families of their own. I mean, they're all sort of living all in the same place, but these guys are, older and separate. And finally, the wife that he loves gives him a son. And this is the son that gets all of his attention and all of his love. And when this happens, when we're introduced to him, we begin to see a big difference between what we think God is doing in the upper story, what God is doing, and what's happening in Joseph's life. So we're introduced to him in Genesis 37. And in verse 2 in Genesis 37, it starts off with, "This is the account of Jacob." And it's going to take you from 37 to 50. I mean, it's a lot of, 13 chapters. And Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And he brought their father a bad report about them. Because they're out there, Jacob is sort of the apple of his daddy's eye. And he goes out there and he sees what the older sons are doing and he doesn't like it. And maybe they're picking on him or whatever it is, we don't know. But he comes back to dad and gives a bad report on what the older brothers are doing. In verse 3 says, "Now Israel," Jacob, been changed to Israel, "loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him." Some of the versions call it a robe of many colors. "When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him." You know what I mean about a dysfunctional family? What amazes me is how many times we see in Scripture, and this is a little side note, that we see these wonderful Bible characters that God, in the upper story of what God is doing, what God is working in history, uses these guys to work towards the coming of Christ and to tell his story of redemption. But the people he uses are so imperfect. And some of these guys get a pass as great Bible heroes, but get a fail as dads, as fathers, because of what they do. And here's Israel. He's a great Bible hero, and he's going to be the one that, has the 12 sons, and they become the 12 tribes of Israel, and yet, in his old age, he loves this kid, and he spoils this kid. And the other sons who are older hate him for it. And that is tough. God is going to be working in Joseph's life. And so Joseph early on begins to have very vivid dreams. We sometimes have dreams, dreams that wake you up and you remember them. Sometimes they wake you up and you don't remember them, thank God. But Joseph was having some very vivid dreams. And he said he had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. Because he said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." So he's the youngest one. He's got the fancy clothes that daddy gives to him that the rest of them don't have. And he's dreaming and saying, "Yeah, I had this dream, and y'all are going to bow down to me." If that isn't throwing fuel on the fire of hatred, And his brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen, I had another dream, and this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." The sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me. When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. So we get this idea. So Joseph is this young kid, 17-year-old, spoiled punk kid, who is hurt by his brother's, negative reactions, but doesn't learn anything from it, and, has these dreams, and he can't wait to tell them this dream, even though these dreams, place them in a bad place. There's some pretty intense problems here. In some of the things that have happened, Joseph was the firstborn of Jacob's true love, Rachel, and Jacob foolishly favored him above all the rest of them. And if you have a number of kids and you favor any of them above the rest of them, that's always going to be bad news. It always is. And he gave him the richly ornamented robe, whatever that meant. And it was a high, something that was very costly in those days. And Jacob, without realizing it, adds fuel to the fire in creating the negative reaction from the brothers. And then he had those dreams. And he tells, you thought Jersey Shore keeping up with the Cardassians was bad. I mean, they could do a whole daytime drama for 40 years out of the life of Joseph, and this kind of stuff that was going on. It makes me think of, why are those reality shows so popular? It's because we like seeing other people in worse situations than we are, and I think sometimes that's what it is. And it's pretty bad, but it gets worse for Joseph. And it gets worse really quickly. Because Jacob, even though Joseph has told him these dreams, and he's reacted to it and said, "What? Are you nuts?" Loose translation. He's told him these dreams. He's reacted to them. He's still sending Joseph out to check on his brothers. And Joseph going out to check on his brothers, is sort of like the owner of the company walking in day and bringing in his 19-year-old son and says, he's now the vice president, do what he says, and he doesn't know anything. It just causes resentment and hatred. And the brothers, they've been working and they've been out in the field with the flocks. They've been working hard. It's hot. They're sweaty. They're dirty. They're hungry. And they're tired. And out comes the fair-haired boy, wearing his coat of many colors. He comes out to check on them, wearing the one thing that gets their goat more than anything else. The moment they see him, in verse 19, their jealousy jumps into overdrive, and the moment they see him, they get angry. You ever have anybody make you that angry? The moment you see them, you don't even have a chance to even, it's not a, oh yeah, there he is, I think that makes me angry. You're just, immediately and that's, that gets a little crazy, And they turn to each other, come on, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and just say a ferocious animal devoured him. Let's just kill him and say an animal killed him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams. They're so separated from him by all of these, by number one, they're grown men, he's just 17, and by the fact that he has a doting parent who dotes on him but doesn't dote on them, they know how Jacob feels about him. There is something that God has built into the psyche of a man. I've shared this story before, but when I was at the pastor's conference put on by Promise Keepers in Atlanta in 1994, and they had 40,000 pastors there. It was sort of a tithe of all the pastors in the country from all different churches. It was a wonderful conference. And one of the guys was getting up to speak, and it may have been James Dobson, but he was talking about the impact that we have and he was dealing with the fact that there's this connection that guys need to have. They need to have this blessing. They need to have another man who is older, respect them, honor them, tell them you're doing good, I'm proud of you. And he says, but that doesn't happen in our culture. Now, he's talking to pastors, church leaders. He finally says, he's building to a point, and he finally says, now, if you had someone in your life who lifted you up, if you had your father or a man in your life who said they were proud of you and you're doing well and lifted you up and encouraged you, stand up. My dad was real good at that. You know, all of John. And I stood up. This is 1994, so this is 30 years ago. So I'm 32, maybe. And I stand up. And in a circle of, surrounded by guys, the nearest guy standing up is 10 seats away. 40,000 pastors. That was the ratio. And the guy who was speaking was speechless. Because what his point was, you guys that are changing the world for the Christ are the ones who have been encouraged. And he realized that that wasn't so. And he said, to you guys that are standing up, you know what this is like to receive encouragement from another man. Have another man say, I'm proud of you, you're doing well, you know, I love you, God loves you, keep doing this. He says, you guys that are standing up, would you do that for the men sitting around you? I had guys in their 70s in tears because I or the next guy standing over there was the first man to ever look them in the eye and say, I'm proud of you, you're doing good. God is pleased with you. No man had ever told them that. You see the damage Jacob did to his family. The lower story here is awful. It's awful. It really is. It is tragic. Now, God has an upper story. There's a story that God is telling. But the lower story is terrible. In verse 26, Judah, one of Leah's boys, says, what does it gain us if we kill him and cover it up? Let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother. So at least one guy stands up to it. He doesn't like him. He says, he's our brother. We can't kill him. Let's just sell him. You know? And that's exactly what they do. They take his coat. They sell him as a slave. And they get some blood on the coat and they go back to dad and say, oh man, Joseph was killed. How tragic. Now, Joseph goes from the favored son in a fairly wealthy family, and now he's a slave. Literally a slave. He goes from being the privileged sibling to a slave. Piece of property. He went out going into the fields to check on his brothers to being pulled from a pit, shackled as a slave, and led away by complete strangers. And the Ishmaelites and the Midianites were slave traders from long ago. And again, you know, we're going back to some of the differences. Remember we were talking about when Abraham slept with Hagar and Ishmael was born, and how his hand would be against all men and all men would be against him. In the beginning of the whole, that all of the Arab races came from there, and that animosity and hostility is still there. Why is this one group of people so hostile to everybody and everybody's always hostile to them? And they, even back then, were slave traders. And so it goes way back. You know, this is a cultural thing that goes way back. And so they took him from there up by, you know, up in the area of Israel and took him down to Egypt and sold him to a guy named Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, captain of the guard. And, you know, the other brothers, you know, dipped coat in goat's blood, took it to dad and said, you know, Joseph is dead. And the animal killed him. And, you know, Jacob is brokenhearted and is inconsolable. And even after all the other sons, you know, this is the chance for all the other sons to step up. And they step up to try and console their father. And he is inconsolable. And he mourns uncontrollably. You get to Genesis 39. And as we go through the story, again, we're going to go through it pretty quickly. Joseph has been taken to Egypt, and he's a slave. And he is a slave in Potiphar's household. But because the scripture says the Lord was with Joseph, because Joseph was, you know, had the presence of God and the blessing of God upon him all the time, everything that Joseph did, God blessed. So if they put him in charge of something, that was blessed and that was profitable. And Potiphar began to notice that whatever he put this young man in charge of, did really well. And even as a slave, he began to work his way up the chain of command. Until Potiphar realized that this guy was so profitable that he puts him in charge as his household manager, basically in charge of everything. Here's Joseph, and after a few years, he's worked himself up, and he's now in charge of everything for this guy's household, because everything he touches, God blesses. And it's God who's doing it. See, he knew that there was something special about Joseph, whether it's his leadership gifts, his administration, his managerial abilities. You know, well, what it was God was watching out for him. God had a plan. God had a story God was writing. And because of that, over in chapter 39, it says in verse 4, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put everything in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So he left in Joseph's care everything he had. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Wow. You want to talk about a trusted, you know, he was a slave, but we would call it a trusted employee, that God was just pouring out his blessing. God was preparing, God was working, and he was doing that. And you think, well, that sounds really good. Now he's in charge of everything. This guy doesn't have to worry about anything except what he puts on his plate. And Joseph is doing all the work. Wouldn't you love to have somebody doing all your work? You know, and doing it better than you, so you don't have to worry about it. And you know, he was sort of like that. And that sounds really good. And then it gets worse. I mean, Joseph is, you know, he's out there, he's the top kid, he's a kid that daddy loves and gives him the fancy coat, and then he's a slave. But God blesses him, and he works himself up, and now just a few years later, he's, you know, he's in his 20s, early 20s, and he's in charge of this guy's whole household, because everything he does, God blesses. And then you get to chapter 39. Then verse 6, and it goes from there. Because not only was Joseph a great leader, he's a good-looking kid. And, you know, I'm not going to ask, because I don't want to know if you've ever watched Desperate Housewives. You know. Potiphar's wife, who was probably the Eva Longoria character in Egypt, took notice of him and invited him into her bed in verse 7. And in fact, she repeatedly, every time he was there and her husband wasn't, invited him into her bed. And Joseph, you know, has been taught about God. And he how could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? Not how could I do such a wicked thing and sin against you or sin against... Yeah, okay. and sin against Potiphar and everything. And he says, how could I do this? I mean, he knew it was a God thing. He knew this was a God thing, that he couldn't do this. And he refused, he resisted, and he ran. Not a bad plan. When you're facing temptation, and we all face temptation, he refused, he resisted, and he eventually ran. You know, he did everything he could to get out of the situation. And one day when he's going about his duties, she tried again. And he ran, but she grabbed his coat, for lack of a better term. And he left his coat behind, but he had his character intact. And by the time her husband came home, you know, what is that old saying? Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. She unloaded on Potiphar about how bad and evil Joseph was. You know, I'm paraphrasing what happened, in that he had attempted and tried to go to bed with her. Potiphar was the captain of Pharaoh's bodyguard. The word there is really unique, even in the Hebrew, because it could be the captain of the guard, the captain of the bodyguard, or it could also be the executioner. He could be Pharaoh's executioner. He could be the chief executioner for Pharaoh. And he wouldn't have been a person who had just thrown a slave into prison. But you get the idea sometimes when you read through that, that he trusted Joseph more than he trusted his wife. But now he has to save face. And most of the time, the guy would just kill the slave. But he doesn't. He has Joseph thrown in prison. So Joseph goes from being the top dog of the brothers to being being thrown into a pit and sold as a slave. He works his way up from a slave to being just in charge of this guy's whole household and sort of living the life as the number two guy. Now he's thrown in prison. And Joseph loses more than 10 years of his life in prison. 10 years of his life is spent in prison. I mean, you want to talk about between a rock and a hard place? How do you get through that? You know, top to bottom, back to the top, back to the bottom. How do you do that? The thing to remember, there's two stories being written here. There's an upper story that God is writing, and then there's a lower story. And what's going on in your life may look like prison. Joseph was going through the pits, you know. Joseph was going through the worst time of his life. He's thrown in prison. And he didn't do anything. He was innocent. And he's thrown in prison. He had done the right thing and was thrown in prison. And spent 10 years in prison. But see, but God was with Joseph. Even in that. We look at the circumstances of our life and we judge them by worldly standards of whether this is good or this is bad, whether it's comfortable or uncomfortable, whether we're moving forward or being thrown back, whether we're healthy or whether we're ill, whether we're this or that. And we sort of have this sort of line. We have this invisible line, every one of us, and it's a little different for each one of us, but we have this invisible line, and we judge things on whether it's above the line or below the line, or whether our life is going really well, it's pretty good. You know, and we can see that when we come on Sunday morning. We had a pretty good week. We were pretty much above the line most of the week, and then sometimes we come in and say, man, we were down, dude. We were down here this week, man. We were below the line. It was really bad. You know, and we all have that line. And Joseph's life is going choom, 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 like this. And he's spending years down here. The time he's spending down here
is nothing. This is nothing. The little bit of time he spent as the favorite son is nothing to the time he spent as a slave. Which is, then he's up here as the Potiphar's number two, but that's nothing in terms of the years he spent in prison. And when you spend your life below the line, life ain't pretty. You're not talking prisons in the United States.
We watched a movie last night, and we were watching the movie, and there was a scene in the movie where they're confronting this Russian mobster who was in charge of all the bad. And he was this old guy, and he had survived in prison in Siberia by chewing off his own fingers to prevent frostbite and to keep from going into the mines. And he was just this hard-bitten old guy, do anything to survive. And the hero of the story says, well, you're going to go to prison. He says, prison in the United States is like taking a vacation. You know, you have to think how bad it was for Joseph. And he's left in prison for 10 years. Sometimes the things we go through below the line we see no end in sight. When you're below the line, when you're down here, sometimes we can't see the light. We're looking this way, we're looking down the timeline this way, we can't see a light. The light is up here. But we're not looking up here. We're looking down the timeline, and there just seems to be no end to this. You see, God is writing an upper story. God is writing a different story. And He's going to use every moment we have above the line and every moment we have below the line to write His story of redemption in our lives. That's what he was doing with Joseph. What we see as separation, God sees as preparation. What Joseph had in his lower story is in the prison. God in his upper story sees the palace where he's going to end up. Joseph can't see that. All Joseph can see is the prison, the lower story. God is always writing an upper story in our lives. There's always something up there where He's taking us. And eventually that is heaven itself. That is heaven itself. Not that we don't have blessings and above the line experiences that He has for us. But eventually that's heaven itself. But even when we're down below the line, that isn't a time when God abandons us. That is a time that God doesn't cause. But God will look at our lives and even look at the worst times of our life where we go the line. And God will look at us and what He's doing in us to make us like Christ. And God can, yeah, I can use that. I can use that. I can build on that. I can use that to build a character, to shape a character. To shape an integrity, to shape a heart. See? God's upper story is always a story of redemption. But just when we're below the line, it's hard to see. Sometimes Joseph is portrayed as the ultimate sort of optimist, that he always could see. No, I don't think so. I think he went through those 10 years and thought this is the way it was going to be. He was thrown in prison and forgotten. There had been no trial. There's no record of this. There's no official record of him being thrown in prison. Potiphar was the chief guy. He'd throw this guy in prison. There's no trial. There's no charges. You're just thrown in prison and forgotten. And for all intents and purposes, he's there for the rest of his life. There is no end. On the timeline down here, there's no end. But God is writing a different story. So when we're down here, and we get there every once in a while. Everybody does. Circumstances may be different, but we all get below the line every once in a while. always good to remember Joseph. And remember Abraham. We studied Abraham. Abraham had times above the line. Abraham had times below the line. But God is writing a different story. A story of redemption. And when we're down here, that's always a good thing to remember. That God will even use the worst things that happen. He doesn't cause them, but He will use the worst things that happen to us to mold us into His image. If we'll just be faithful, if we won't give up, if we'll just strive to, whatever the circumstances, be the best we can be for Him and be faithful and believe, He will use the worst right there. Now what we're going to do is where we're going to stop. And next week, we'll come back with Joseph in prison and what happens in those 10 years and how God begins to take the rest of the story. You know, as Paul Harvey used to say, and we'll see the rest of the story. Or at least some more of the story. And we may be able to do Joseph in 2 weeks. It may take longer, but we'll begin to see what God is doing. But get that picture in your mind. You have this line in your life. And all of the wonderful things that happen above the line, and all the times we're below the line, and in our view, it's bad, it's terrible, it's awful, and painful, and hurtful, or whatever. That God is above that. God isn't causing it, but God can use every experience above the line and every experience below the line to write His story in your heart. And bring you to the place of redemption. That's the idea. And we'll stop here and pick up next week with Joseph in prison. Father, thank You for Your grace towards us. And thank You for using Joseph at the worst times of his life. Thank You for using us at the worst times of our life. For remembering when we're down in the bottom of that pit. You know we're there. And You know You have a future for us. A future that is good. A future that is a future of promise. We may not see it, but You do. And sometimes faith is simply remembering that You see the future that we can't. That future of promise. Help us to that, Father, we pray in Jesus' name.